Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us on the program this morning. First off, just to give us a bit of background on this one, when we talk about 60s, 70s, the research that originally went into Ashmore Reef, just how significant was the sea snake variety and population at the time?
It was the most important place in the world for sea snakes. There was 17 species and you could, you know, easily find 100 snakes in a day. And, yeah, they disappeared.
So have there been any theories as to why? What theories raised as to where the sea snakes actually went?
It's one of the greatest mysteries in conservation science that we've ever seen.
So going about researching it, how did you even begin?
So there was an amazing team led by V. Lukaszek this person, Mick Guinea, who went out to those reefs and surveyed year in, year out. And then when they realised that the snakes were disappearing rapidly in about 1995, they intensified the surveys, just counting the snakes. And then in 2012, when they had just disappeared despite hundreds of hours of searching for them, and, you know, we'd lost two species. We thought we'd lost the leaf scale and the short-nosed sea snake. They just went searching for whatever data they could find, whether it was things like coral bleaching, seismic testing and oil spills from the oil and gas industry, disease, shifting sediments. But the problem was when we put all the data of possible explanations with the rate at which they declined, the speed at which they declined, nothing properly explained the beginning of the disappearance and the end of disappearance in 2012, and there was just no snakes left.
So has your research uncovered any answers?
Well, the truth is we will never know what happened to Ashmore Reef because they disappeared before we got the chance to discover it. And one of the greatest concerns was that we'd lost these two species, the short-nosed and the leaf-scaled sea snakes, because that was the only place in the world that we knew they lived and bred. But a couple of snakes washed up in coastal Western Australia, and V. Lukaszek and I, we thought, well, maybe they still exist. And in an extraordinary turn of events, we get a second chance to look after leaf-scaled and short-nosed sea snakes because I was throwing up on a research vessel in Shark Bay, Western Australia, when a little brown snake came on board in the trawl bycatch. And it was a leaf-scaled sea snake, and it was 2,000 kilometres from the only place in the world that we knew we existed. And then, even more extraordinarily, Ranger Grant Griffin from the WA government was out on Ningaloo Reef and snapped some sea snakes who were courting, getting ready to make babies, and it was the other extinct species.
That seems absolutely extraordinary to me. I mean, it's like these things have not just hidden themselves, but picked up and moved.
They didn't pick up and move. It's actually that so little is known about sea snakes and how to identify them that they were right under our nose the whole time and we didn't realise. So there's a little snake that went to the WA Museum in 1982, the year that I was born. It's a leaf-scaled sea snake, but it got misidentified as a shark-bay sea snake.
So really these species are not terribly recognised, not terribly researched then?
They're one of the most under-researched reptiles in the entire world. And so I have set about figuring out which species live in Western Australia and where they live. So I've spent a lot of time hanging off the back of a boat on a rope and on a snorkel. And when I see a sea snake, I drop off, I go down and I catch it, I bring it on board, photograph it, I take a tiny little tail scale, and then I take from that scale their DNA, and then I make sea snake family trees out of the DNA. And that lets me find out who's related to who, which species live in which towns. You know, do they live in Ningaloo Reef or do they only live in Shark Bay? And then I can do really fine scale family trees and figure out how far little sea snakes are moving to find girlfriends and boyfriends to make babies with. And what I'm discovering with species like the shark-based sea snake and the leaf-scaled sea snake is that they don't move very far to breed. They're really home-loving, just like us. There's one type of sea snake in WA, the turtle-headed sea snake. It might not even move a kilometre in its life to find a girlfriend or a boyfriend. So what that means is that you have to protect your little patch. And if you're on top of things and you can, you know, keep your little patch healthy, your little local management area, you can do a great job of looking after sea snakes. But if you don't look after your patch, no one else is going to swim from elsewhere to top up your little patch for a very long time, if ever. So possibly once these snakes are gone from a patch, they're gone for a long time, if not for good. So we've really got to protect them over those small scales.
Well, just as perhaps a final point, I mean, obviously you mentioned there coral bleaching and the like, and indeed Ashmore Reef, looking at the future of the reef and looking at the future of these little patches, what can be done, what more can be done to actually protect these species and their environment?
We have to make decisions as a society that reduces carbon emissions. We have to stop burning coal and move to a sustainable, renewables, job-filled economy, because that climate change is the thing that is going to wipe out a lot of things. It's going to take away our coral reefs and it's going to take away our sea snakes. So if we don't limit climate change by limiting carbon emissions, we lose global treasures like the Great Barrier Reef and sea snake populations. And if we can do that, and then we can get on top of other things like looking after seagrass, protecting the water from pollution, looking after the land beside the ocean, keeping the trees on it so that the sediment doesn't wash off and make the water cloudy and make the animals sick. If we can do those things like looking after the water quality and the seagrass and the coral and the habitat as best we can, then when climate change comes along, it stands the best chance to survive. And then if we limit climate change as much as we can, we limit the biggest impact.
Well, it would be an absolute tragedy to lose some of these areas and indeed lose some of these species that are not even yet understood. Blanche, thank you very much. Do appreciate your time.
It was my absolute pleasure. Thank you.